I'm living in a silent film, portraying Himmler's sacred realm of dream reality. I'm frightened by the total goal, drawing to the ragged hole, and I ain't got the power anymore. No, I ain't got the power anymore. I'm the twisted name on Garbo's eyes, living proof of Churchill's lies. I'm destiny. I'm torn between the light and dark, where others see their target, divine symmetry.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstead Show, the show where we talk about comics. This week I'm joined by my very special guest, Sean Cranberry, as co-host, and Hello. We are interviewing Mr. Mark Siegel. We got you there, Mark?
Yep, I'm here.
Excellent. Now, Mark, you are the publisher of First Second Books.
Yes.
Or :01, if
That's
we
right.
want to be fancy.
Yep.
Now,
Graphic, too.
First Second Graphics, is that what you said?
No, the graphic, the name is both a graphic and words.
It's kind of like
words
Prince.
For pictures. But yeah, first on the radio, I think you kind of have to say First Second.
Now, First Second, you've been doing this for how long has First Second been in print? 2 years now?
In print? No, since May, since last May. It's barely a year.
Oh, wow.
And we've been, you know, in the making for 3 years just about. But yeah, we appeared in stores last May in all the English-speaking world.
Now,
let me jump in here. Hi, Mark.
Hey,
Sean Cranberry from Sophia Books, among other places.
Yeah, hi.
You guys hit a home run right off the bat, right, with American-born Chinese.
Pretty much
on your first list.
That's right.
You had this really, really great graphic novel that was recognized by the establishment, by the book establishment, and I believe it was shortlisted for the National Book Award. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was a finalist for the National Book Award, which was it was the first time any graphic novel had ever been nominated for a National Book Award.
Yeah, it really blew people's minds.
It did, and it was, you know, and that was definitely, we were off to a very good start anyway, and this was suddenly, you know, better than icing. I mean, it just kind of threw the whole thing up a notch, and we thought, okay, well, this is, you know, this was our break for the year, and I think we had been out maybe 6 months, 7 months at that point.
Right.
And then I think another month passed by, and up comes this other award, which is the Prince Award, which is, you know, one of these prestigious library awards. It's also a very important, it's important for the sales in the library world when you're talking about 75,000, 80,000 libraries, you know, in the States.
Yeah, it's the whole library sales avenue is one that people don't think about very much, but I know from
it's
my
huge.
Own conversations with librarians that they, even more so than the book trade, have really gotten on board with the graphic novel thing.
Yeah, and actually a long time before everybody. I mean, before the chains, before everybody, librarians were saying, you know, 10 years ago they were telling people, hey, you know, excuse me, it's not showing up on your sales figures, but, you know, Tintin and Asterix are always off the shelf.
Oh, absolutely.
And then it was only about 5-6 years ago that publishers started paying attention to that. And then in the States there was several trade journals, you know, I think foremost among them was Publishers Weekly, but they started, you know, drumming up this fact of the graphic novel being something that you, at first, you know, you had to pay attention to, and now you really can't avoid if you're in publishing.
Right, right. There was a time where publishing just kind of put its head in the sand about this, right? And they just kind of looked at it as though it was for people who... or permanent adolescence, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, which is not necessarily false, but...
But that's only a small part of it. I mean, I think
that's right.
It would be like reducing the novel or reducing the movie or reducing music.
Right.
You know, where there's like, there's a whole gamut. As you know, obviously.
Now, I just, I think for our viewers. Myself staring at Sean.
Yeah.
For our listeners... let's get a little background on First Second Books, because you've kind of, in my view, kind of came out of nowhere with this like incredible library of stuff. But who is First Seconds? What is First Second? And, you know, what was the original idea around?
Yeah, sure. Well, basically, I was I grew up in France, so I was you know, you could say I was born and raised with a different kind of comics than the American superheroes. I mean, we had those too, but I was more in that European tradition, and after I came to the States for college and I stayed, I became familiar more with the American and Canadian indie comic scene, and then, you know, later the manga stuff that was starting to explode here. So, you know, I came with a different background, and then I was really in publishing and children's publishing. I was working at Simon & Schuster, and while I was there, I dipped into a bit of my first acquisitions, where I acquired a book called Little Vampire Goes to School by Joan Sfar, which popped onto the New York Times bestseller list, and that was an experiment at putting comics really into the picture book world of mainstream publishing. And I also illustrated a book called Sea Dogs, because that's another thing I do on my own. And that was, I did in a comic style, like very much kind of European school approach to it. It was really fun project. But those two things popped out, And then actually there was a funny thing that happened, because there was a little independent arts paper called Fizz that came out with an interview of me that made me sound like the messiah of the coming graphic novel or something. But it was very flattering. But those three things, like the Sfar book, mm-hmm. my own Sea Dogs book, and then this article, somehow it became kind of without my really trying, it became a resume that landed in the lap of several high-powered publishers. So the next thing I knew, I was interviewing with a number of, very much the higher-ups of several big houses who were all looking to position themselves into the graphic novel phenomenon,
right.
Which was already underway now. And what had happened in the background was I had, with the experiment with Little Vampire, and I was looking at America and I was thinking, okay, what is really begging to happen here? Mm-hmm. And not just America, but more in a bigger way, the Anglo-Saxon world, because it's a similar pattern in the UK and in Australia and New Zealand.
Right.
And then I thought, what would be, unique to that world, so it wouldn't imitate, it was not trying to do the Japanese thing or try to do the French and Belgian thing, but what could be uniquely here but still have this really international dimension and go for quality, like go for the books that are going to be around forever, like mm-hmm. really, aim high, like the crazy ambitious dream of it. And I was basically fleshing out this vision. At the time I thought maybe in-house at Simon & Schuster I might get a chance to run at this in some limited way. But I had this written up, and I had done a bit of a... It wasn't really a presentation. It was just kind of jotting a vision down.
Mm-hmm.
So I handed that to a few people. And, one of my meetings was a breakfast meeting with John Sterling, who's the head of Henry Holt Books, and Simon Boughton, who's the head of Roaring Brook.
Wow.
Which is, Roaring Brook had just been bought by the big Holtzbrinck group. And they were... and they still are one of the really cool, independent-minded children's publishers. And they basically called a second breakfast. I think a week later, we met again early morning, and they said, the first thing they said was, well, we'd like to offer you an imprint. And I was sitting there kind of like I really saw that one coming. But
yeah, of course. Who doesn't get that said to them all the time?
Yeah, so I didn't say I'll think about it. I said, okay.
Yeah.
And I said, what will my editorial committee look like? That was my big worry. Mm. And they said, you.
Wow.
Which was very bold. It's actually,
yeah.
And it's also very much the philosophy here is they're not, it's not committee-driven. Which is a huge relief, and that immediately set them apart from the other people I was talking to, and so then I basically had a chance to run at this, and I told them, okay, so it can't be cautious or overly cautious. It's got to be really bold. We've got to really set out to shape this, to really, how can we raise the bar so that the kind of editorial process that goes into a graphic novel is on a par with the best editorial in, say, adult trade novels.
Mm-hmm.
Can we get the level of Knopf
yeah.
for graphic novels?
Yeah.
I don't know if you know the editor, Sonny Mehta. He's like this legendary, editor. And I felt like, the graphic novel needs that level of care on the editorial process. It needs that level of care on the art direction. So you have, and there are already some very good art directors working on comics, but it's like holding that and raising that bar if possible.
Right.
And then on the production, that, making books that you just want to keep, that are not just pulp throwaway. So that was very much a part of the vision of First Second. Then there was also the international dimension, which was, yes, a strong core of English-speaking talent and Americans and Canadians, but also people from all over the world,
mm-hmm.
So we've got Malaysia and Africa and France and Italy and, many other places coming on board. So that was part of the vision, the quality, the international side.
Yeah.
And then in a way, secretly, the way I think of First Second is I'm making a home, which I hope can become really the very best home for anyone who wants to work in graphic novels.
Right.
And so part of that was also not just aiming for people who are already in the comics world,
mm-hmm.
but also reaching out to other fields But not just recklessly, you know, but going for, you know, we've got some really top playwrights working some scripts for us. We've got some novelists like Jane Yolen, Adam Rapp.
Mm-hmm.
I've signed some people from the... Do you get the Colbert Report and the Daily Show?
Yes, we do.
I have some writers from there and from...
Oh, wow.
Know, like some, just basically people I'm excited to work with.
That's awesome.
Kind of coming in and if they're new to the field of graphic novels, I either, you know, team them up with a really seasoned artist or we really, you know, keep some good coaching and give them lots of stuff to read and really learn... You know, learn the form.
Right.
But anyway, I'm babbling.
No, it's okay.
Quite interesting. And
let me tell you the first time I saw the First Second catalog as a retailer and as somebody who works with the book trade very closely.
Yeah.
And who works in an international bookstore where we carry a lot of these. The stories that you are printing in the original language.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, please tell.
And
what was that like?
And it was like, especially coming from, I guess, is it Hachette? Is that the name of the company that owns the Holzbrinks?
No, Holzbrink is actually the owning company.
Right. Okay, well...
Hachette is a different group.
Is a different group entirely? Okay.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
My mistake, but...
No, that's okay.
You don't often get to see, outside of Fantagraphics or Drawn and Quarterly, catalogs coming through a store in a stack of book catalogs that are as exciting and fresh as the first second one.
Wow.
So when I saw that, I was amazed and ordered, I think, two or three copies of everything in the catalog. And,
oh, man.
And I must...
Is your store in Vancouver?
Yeah, we're downtown Vancouver.
All right.
And to say that the audience responded positively, the audience being the customers, is an understatement. I mean, the American-born Chinese and all the others, they just left the store almost immediately.
That's so marvelous.
So it was really great that high-quality graphic novels from around the world are commonly available in really nice editions, and they're not next to impossible to find. So
right. Oh, this is great.
This is great.
And I really do believe that. I mean, I think the audience is there in a big way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and we have, like, there's this analogy that I like to use, which is, do you remember that book or that movie also, the George Clooney movie was The Perfect Storm?
Yes.
Sebastian Unger's book. And there was this idea of these three storms converging to make the mother of all storms.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're in that with comics and with graphic novels or, you know, whatever label, you know, whatever category they end up with.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're in this, and one of the storms is the fact that readers are hungry for good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and another storm is the fact that the publishers are all the major publishers have now jumped on the bandwagon. And you know, in the next couple of years, it's just going to be more and more and more, for better and for worse, obviously.
Yeah, well, you know, there's one thing that publishers understand, and that's money.
Right.
Right. And the thing that everyone keeps talking about is in an industry, the publishing industry, where... numbers are never satisfying.
Yeah.
Well, everything's going down except comics.
Well, yeah, graphic novels, comics, manga, those are the areas that are showing the increase.
Yes.
And dramatic increases.
And I think the independent booksellers are also
reaping
the ones who
the
are
benefits,
coming to the table are realizing that they can really have a hangout, you know, like a live aisle that's going to be, you know, really trafficked. If they stock it right,
you know,
and if they have some credibility in what they choose.
Yeah, it's true.
And that's something Sean does with getting a lot of all the European selection stuff.
Yeah.
One thing I'm curious about is some of your choices in publishing, and one person really stuck out to me, I was really surprised, was Eddie Campbell. Like, I'm a huge Eddie Campbell fan, and I thought he was pretty much firmly entrenched in the top shelf. And,
The thing is, I mean, what's funny with Eddie is that I don't think he's necessarily entrenched anywhere, and in some ways, what he does with Top Shelf is not the same as what we do. So it's like different avenues for different things.
And that was actually with his book; it was quite different too,
isn't it? I mean, I think the Fate of the Artist is quite different. But then I had approached him because of his Black Diamond Detective Agency. Which is, I don't know, I don't think that's in stores yet, but it's coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an experiment for him. He took a screenplay, so it's like this kind of Hollywood screenplay, and he really totally did an Eddie Campbell on it, mm-hmm. and it's brilliant. He kind of twists it and subverts it, and but he tells a really incredible story, and he's got another project with us beyond that, which I think is going to knock everybody's socks off, you know, yet again. But yeah, you see, what's interesting in a way, you're asking, like, you go, it's a little bit like you look at the first season, second season, and you go, like, well, that's kind of an anomaly in the mix. Mm-hmm. But then again, some people said that about the Trondheim book, Alien, or mm-hmm. about, we have this book, Teo Gracias, about the genocide in Rwanda.
Oh, yeah.
Or you've got The Lost Colony, which is a really kind of experimenting in new ways with the form itself. And mm-hmm. and it's like, in a way, what's the challenge for us is that we're going to look crazy eclectic for about 3 or 4 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's going to start making sense because everybody's going to be able to see that what we're doing is opening up different avenues. And then as we go, once we have a few seasons under our belt, you're going to see an overall collection that hangs on certain themes.
Mm.
You know, where you have a young section and a mm-hmm. middle-y kind of either YA or all ages section and an adult section.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is eventually I see for a second becoming a wall of shelves that whoever you are and whatever your age, you know, you can walk up to it and find something for you. And if you're young, you can grow up with us and graduate to Eddie Campbell, graduate to, you know, some of the other things, you know. So I don't know if that's coming across the way I'm saying it there, but
right.
It's a
bold vision.
And I think you'll see that in time it'll make more sense, you know, why, you know, what is Eddie Campbell doing next to Sardine in Outer Space? It's like, well, he's not right next to it, but he's in the, it's like in that vision there's space for all those.
Now, how did you get hooked up with Eddie? Was that something where he was someone that you thought, because, I mean, he is such, I think, a really important creator right now. It's just someone that would be...
He is. He's brilliant. I mean, he's like a... You can't really miss him. There's a few people that are, you know, in some ways that are already rock stars in the comics world
mm-hmm.
that I felt I wanted to approach. You know, there's definitely the cream of the French crop, as far as I'm concerned, mm-hmm. are on board with us. We now have an incredible project with Christophe Blaine.
Nice.
Who's a really good one from France. But then people like, you know, Eddie Campbell, Paul Pope, or people from the indie comic scene like Jessica Abel, you know, there's a bunch of them that are people with, I think, something First Second can offer them something that they may not have had yet.
Wow.
Which is a kind of a platform and a launch into a much, much, much bigger audience. You know, because we're talking really, the comics world is one part of our world.
Yes.
But we're also really making a lot of efforts in many directions at once to woo the big mainstream reader and the people who are not comics readers and not graphic novel readers. And we're telling them, look, these are real authors. These are works that are going to stand the test of time. Take a dip, you know, find the one that speaks to you, but mm-hmm. somewhere in this, something will speak to you and you'll get it, you know, kind of like, you know, I don't know if you've had this, but, you know, I remember the first time I had a really, really good wine, you know, and I tasted it and I went like, oh, okay, this is what all the fuss is about,
right.
You know.
Right.
It's like you get it and you kind of, from then on, you can start to explore it and that kind of thing.
Right. That's very apt after talking about Eddie Campbell.
Yeah, that's right, with Backus. And yeah, and I feel, I mean, it's a weird thing. Like, you know, I don't think all of Eddie Campbell I would have been the best to publish, you know, but
mm-hmm.
I felt like with The Fate of the Artists, even though it ties in with his Alec and autobiographical...
It's quite different, though.
It's different, it really is, and we're giving it a different context, you know, because of the way we launch it.
It's also neat that the color aspect to it, because in the other Alec stuff,
mm-hmm.
is it's all in black and white,
yeah.
and the only other color thing was a Batman story.
That's right. That's right. Wow, you know, you're Eddie Campbell.
I'm a comics aficionado.
You're an ink stud.
Yeah.
I am a main ink stud. Yeah.
Well, what's great? Well, you'll see the Black Diamond Detective Agency is entirely in gouache. You know, it's entirely in color.
Wow.
And yeah, with Fate of the Artist, I mean, it was lovely to see. You know, because he had almost finished that project when I first called him, And he basically suggested, well, look, okay, you know, I'm willing to do the Black Diamond thing. You know, are you interested in this Fate of the Artist? And, you know, I said, send it along, and took one look, and I thought, okay, this is, you know, we've got to do this. And, yeah. And then I called him back and said, how about if it was in color? You know, and not knowing, you know, how well he would pull that off. And I think he just did a marvelous job. And
wow.
In the end, he ends up using the color in a way that you think, well, it would have been a totally different creature without it.
No, it was definitely quite to its advantage to utilize the color. I'm going to take a quick song break, give you a little breathe and break, and then I'll bring you right back on. So please hold and don't go away.
Okay.
This is Ink Studs on CITR. We were just speaking with Mark Siegel. And who am I going to play, Sean?
Oh, this is a band called Daddy's Hands, a local rock band. Did a show with them a couple of years ago, and Keith Jones did the art.
There we go. Canadian Comic Connection, or Vancouver Comic Connection. Feel a little.
Oh.
Ooh, sorry about that. We have a radio in here that our monitors are blown, so I'm in between song, in between talking. CITR Ink Studs in Vancouver, UBC. I am joined by Mark Siegel, editor. Editor, the right term?
Sure.
Creative director.
My business card says art. Creative. Wait, what does it say?
Editorial director.
Well, we'll give you the full props. And editorial director of First Second Books, one of the most interesting publishers right now, doing. And it seems like it's definitely a brand, like
with vision.
With just seeing like all the books all together, it's definitely like you're going for a certain style.
Right. It's and hopefully it's varied enough, and you have, you know, a variety in themes and styles, and but overall it hangs together.
Yeah, all the books are the same size. Well,
yes, same trim size.
Same height, but not the same width.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. They can get really thick, some of them.
Eddie Campbell is the Fate of the Artist isn't that thick, but compared to the Vampire Love, that's really thick. So.
Yeah.
But it's all excellent books. So we have some more questions about some of the creators that you've brought on hand.
Imported. Oh, which reminds me, actually, the creator, I'm sorry, I missed that. I forgot to say when I was talking about the perfect storm, the third storm being, of course, the creative storm, which is happening. And now it's like, I mean, in North America and all over Europe and all over Asia, it's a really happening medium where there's just an incredible amount of serious talent.
I'm going to have to concur. Like, being a long-term comics fan or aficionado than I am, over the last couple of years, it's definitely been an influx of, I guess, a smarter cartooning.
Yeah.
It would be like when you see people like Kevin Izanga coming in, Anders Nilsson.
Yeah, he's amazing.
And, like, the whole Moam crowd and the Cole Kramer's Urgot thing.
Yes,
definitely neat. And that's one thing is you've kind of got a unique, I guess, a niche within the market with what you're doing. Like, there's a little bit of crossover with, it's the Ignatz Fantagraphics line.
Yeah. Well, you'll see GP from Italy, who's like, he's a kind of a new revelation from the Italian scene. Amazing artist.
And I just read his new book on the bus ride here.
Yeah,
which
just
one?
Got
Garage
it today.
Band?
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome book.
Oh, that's great to hear. Well, wait till you see A Notes from a War Story that's coming.
Oh, yeah.
This fall. It's just really superb.
Perfect.
So, some more questions about some of the creators you're utilizing. You mentioned Paul Pope now.
Yeah.
Is that way down the line, or?
It's for 08. We've got a very big project in the works, for starters.
Good.
And that's called Battling Boy. It's going to be his youngest yet, but it's still very much showcasing his incredible brushstroke. But it's also kind of extending a hand to a big mainstream audience. It's in full color, and it's younger than anything he's done. And it's just a lovely story. I mean, I was just, he brought in the pencils the other day for the opening scene, and I was just getting chills. It's just gorgeous, gorgeous stuff.
He's an amazing artist.
He sure is.
He wrote the story as well?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
all his. This is all his own. And I mean, you'll see it's like it's tempting to kind of ramble on about that one, but I probably should wait, you know, because it'll speak for itself.
Fair enough.
I'm hoping to have at least something to glimpse at the San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, that's exciting.
Because, it's just that one is going to gonna make a ton of noise.
Great.
Now, totally off topic, going away from the arts. Now, you mentioned going to San Diego Comic-Con. I'm just wondering for yourself the balance between being in kind of the book publishing world and, like, is there a major focus on that? Or are you still, like, kind of half and half with, the diamond distributing type comic stores?
Yeah, we work with Diamond, and we work with the comic stores, and what's been great is, you know, the reception in comic stores has been really, really, really welcoming, and that's actually very important. And I feel for myself, I don't want to be one of these imprints that, you know, basically is jumping in with, you know, maybe an understanding of the publishing market, but zero sense of the comics market and the comics reader and little credibility in that department. And you know, I feel like it's an important marker of what we do, you know, that people who really do know comics and have followed them and understand the form feel that we're doing the real thing, it's very important. So we do, you know, we work with Diamond, we work with other distributors, and we work, you know, every city I travel to, I make a point of going to visit the comics shop and to understand, you know, how that's going. I'm very interested in seeing how our young titles fare in the comics shop, because a lot of comic shops are now moving their children's section to the kind of front and center part of the store instead of the little forgotten corner. And we're hoping to have some goodies to stock that with.
It's all Bone's fault.
I know. Bone made... Yeah, that's right.
Jeff Smith, damn you.
Yeah.
Bringing those kids into the comic stores.
All they do is make noise.
And have their parents spend money.
Yeah.
And God bless Jeff
Smith. That's the
future
for the comic store, that's for sure.
That's great.
Well, it
keeps
the future.
But, I mean, yeah, the book... I mean, it's definitely, you know, a foot in different worlds. And, you know, and I'm interested in like the bookstore, but also there's certain books that lend themselves to the kind of a bit of the mass market, you know, I'd like to find a way to have our books everywhere, you know, mm-hmm. in airports and in Kmarts and things like that, some of them anyway.
You got to get a spinner rack. You have to develop a spinner rack.
It's funny because I have one in my office, just a single one that I'm
the prototype?
Thinking like, yeah, we're going to get there. We're going to have that.
Yeah.
Well, I think, and that's kind of interesting, is that the whole airport thing, because I think that that's something that works with the imprint, is that it's all, you know, it's a graphic novel, you can read it on its own. I think that's maybe something that's lost in a lot of other places where the people make graphic novels as part of an epic or something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And find the stuff that really works is the singular story.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we have a bit of both. I mean, there's some things that are... You know, Sardine in Outer Space is a funny thing because it just basically bolted out the door, kind of to our general surprise. And it was until the American-born Chinese, started racking up these awards that the Sardine stuff was leading our sales. And we were hearing back from 8 and 9 year old girls, which is great. You know, because these people are going to be
that's your readers, right there.
That's the readers, and they're going to be in 3-4 years. Yeah. You know, these are going to be some really discerning. An important body of readers out there, and then another 4 or 5 years, they're going to be reviewing our books. You know,
treat them nice. Man.
Yeah,
they'll be taking my space here. What are some titles that we have to look forward to? We're talking about the Black Diamond Detective Agency, the Garage Band just came out, and the Sardine book just came out,
and the Pope book coming out.
The Pope book without. Eventually.
In 2008. So Sarah Varon has this lovely Robot Dreams book, which is wordless book, really extraordinary. It's like it could sell as a young reader's, but it could totally go in any shelf, just about. That's really interesting. I mentioned Notes for a War Story with GP, which I think is going to make some noise.
When can we expect that?
That one is in this fall. I have to get my seasons right. Let me just double check that I'm not saying something stupid here. Oh, okay. Well, if we're talking about this coming season, The Professor's Daughter, I really, really recommend. I mean, that is, I think, one of the most romantic and one of the most beautiful. That's a Jean Sfar script, and Emmanuel Guibert did the artwork.
Mm-hmm.
It's about this kind of Edwardian London. No, sorry, it's Victorian London. And the professor's daughter falls in love with one of the professor's mummies. And she and the mummy of this ancient Egyptian king go gallivanting around London, and it's just like this crazy,
great,
borderline Monty Python, but it's actually really sweet, and it's got this kind of undercurrent of romance, and it's really, really quite something.
Cool.
Then we've got, I don't know, have you read the first Lost Colony book?
I haven't yet.
No, I haven't.
I took a close look at it.
The second one is coming out, and that's a series that I think is going to be monumental. I think it's going to be a monumental thing.
Wow.
And this guy, Grady Klein, is an editor. When I was just getting started, we didn't even have a name yet. There was an editor from another imprint who came by, and he wanted to pick my brains about comics. And he said, oh, and by the way, I've got this friend who has a comic of his own and, you know, want to have a look. And I took 6 black and white pages that he handed in front of me. I looked at them right then and there. And it said, okay, the premise is a little island off somewhere off America in the 19th century. It's cut off from the rest of the country. It's kind of a microcosm of America. And the story begins. There's a little girl, Birdie, and she's really sweet and really adorable. And she's got this poster in her hand that says, great sale and auction. You don't really see the whole poster. And she's counting pennies, and she's kind of, you know, pulling her pockets and looking under her hat, and she's going, you know, I bet I could afford one. And she, for a few pages, you see her basically trying to gather up as much money as she can, and it's just a little handful of change. And then you turn a page, and you see the full poster she's holding in her hand. It says, great sale and auction, Negro slaves. And she then proceeds to buy herself, or she thinks she's buying herself a slave, Louis, who's a young, you know, a young slave. And the two of them become the center of this series, which I really believe is kind of like an American Asterix.
Right.
With a whole gallery of character, and it's really like a candy-colored world, but then he presses a nerve every so often and has this real social commentary. And the second one is coming out this spring, called The Red Menace, which of course is not at all what you know the title would suggest. But it's about the Indian Wars. It's about war profiteering, and that, I mean, it has. I know. I'm sure some people are going to be picking up a subtext of Halliburton and, you know, all kinds of things.
Sure.
But it's really marvelous. And right now we're just in the thumbnails. We just received the thumbnails for book three, which I think is going to just. It's just going to make, I think it's going to make this series a household name, that one.
Well, that's amazing. Well, I'm going to go.
It's a little bit like Lone Wolf and Cub, you know, where the third book is like a real entry point into the series.
Yeah.
It's also for the mainstream reader. And I think book three will do that. But you'll see, I mean, book two is quite phenomenal.
It's a very neat, cartoony style. I love
it.
Very, like, thick, bold black lines with, like, weird, like, kind of edging to it. I can't really phrase
it
quite
like
well enough.
These planes of color that he uses, and his background is in animation. He like single-handedly did this 15-minute short called Dust Bunny, which is incredible. And then this is his real first solo comic project, and you know, he's got 10 books in the works. There's story arcs that run into 10 books.
Oh, wow.
And I'm very excited because I feel like this is one of our babies, you know, one of our... We have quite a lot of newcomers, you'll see, in our coming list, as well as the big, you know, some people with a name already. But he's one of our first discoveries, and I really think he's going somewhere with what he's doing.
That's so amazing.
So an important part of First Second is to be able to, like, promote... These new people who you feel like really deserves attention that might not be your typical comic.
Definitely.
So that brings me to a question that I wanted to ask. I wanted to talk to you about your process in terms of how do you determine what your next books are going to be. I mean, from one point there's a certain amount of serendipity in things like Lost Colony, which is great.
Yeah,
you know, which is a really beautiful thing, and if only publishing could be like that all the time.
Yeah, awesome.
But also, there's a huge well of existing books, like the GP and the Trondheim, and so much of the stuff that you grew up reading in France that has not been translated.
So is
part of what you're doing essentially just licensing the books from the French publishers?
No, not really, actually. I mean, I try not to do that. You know, a lot of the foreign stuff we're publishing, with one or two exceptions, like we have Lutz, you know, with Kampung Boy, and actually you'll see, I think in the fall, if I'm not mistaken, is Town Boy, which is a sequel.
Yes.
Which is, I think, even better. And with exceptions like that, you know, which that was first published, I think, in 79 or 80.
Okay.
But a lot of what we're doing is really the current great new generation of talent in Europe or elsewhere, with, you know, obviously with some exceptions. And whenever we put a book, you know, I really try to think about it as not just kind of a repackaging job, you know, like in some cases we will add an introduction, for example, to the book on the Deo Gracias, about the genocide in Rwanda. We add an introduction. We really think, okay, what kind of conversation do we want to surround this book with?
Right.
You know, if you just kind of print it, translate it, and print it and toss it out there, it's just, you know, another comic, and who knows what anybody makes of it.
Right.
But if you surround it in a certain way where you're saying, by the packaging and the presentation and the thought that you put into all that, you're saying, look, this is an important event of a book. You know, this is something major, or this is something remarkable in some other way, or this is an author that is a unique, extraordinary voice that we're championing. It's very different, you know, so I get behind those books in a way that is more than just kind of picking up a license.
Right,
even though, you know, there's always going to be some part of our list that'll be like these translated works. But we're also developing new commissions with foreign talent. We have. Do you know Steven Seagal and Teddy Christensen?
I love their work.
Did you read It's a Bird, right?
I'm fanatical about both of their.
Well, we've
got
a book
everything.
With them called Genius.
Oh wow!
Which is it's so good. It's so good. It's a mystery and a whole conspiracy thing, but it's tied in with Einstein, and it's just really, really, really something.
These guys are
brilliant.
I think Steve Seagal's one of those writers where when he hits the mark, it's fabulous. I mean, he's got some of that. When he does superhero stuff, it's just, you can tell it's just work for hire. But when he's doing his thing, like that, it's a plane or it's a bird, the Grendel storyline,
the House of Secrets, it's just incredible.
And Teddy Christensen, I think, is really such an important artist that
he is. He's a major virtuoso artist. I mean, we have a lot of, in a way, you know, to answer your question, was that Sean who was asking that?
Yeah, that's right.
So the thing about it is kind of mysterious, I think, you know, and I find that it's not necessarily something you can totally calculate, you know, I'm going to go after this and that or the other, and because the best projects seem to have this magic timing about them that nobody quite controls.
Right.
Excuse me. And you have, I think there's a general vision guiding this, so I tend to see, I think a little bit in terms of balances, you know, I'm going, okay, we're getting a little too much on the young end, you know, I need to develop some, look for maybe a kind of a politically weighty project or something adult, on the adult end, or, you know, there's like, it's kind of like, you know, it's a balancing act, like tacking if you sail against the wind.
Sure.
so a little bit of that kind of over and under compensating and trying to feel the way ahead.
Yeah.
And then part of it is really thinking that I need to follow my lights, you know, and there's people that I'm drawn to, there's authors and creators that I just warm to, and I feel like, you know, I can definitely take this book and fight for it and champion it, you know, because one of the things I want for a second to do, you know, which isn't the case, especially with the bigger corporate houses, is that, you know, you can have in those places some real champions for the authors in-house in the editorial department, for example. But then once the book is published, it's basically, you know, it's in the hands of the machine, and and if it doesn't kind of hit right away, then it's going to just fall off into the backlist.
Yeah.
And you get a little bit of the syndrome of the Hollywood, you know, opening weekend or nothing.
Oh, yeah. So
which
true.
I hate. You know, I hate that. I mean, I think that really kills, you know, it kills the
creativity.
It does. It really does. It kills it.
Well, it puts the emphasis in the wrong place. Anyway.
And there's some books that really have a kind of a long, you know, there's some authors that you develop over 3-4 books, you know, which is something publishers used to do a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of lamenting about that these days.
I think Art Spiegelman's a perfect example of that. He couldn't have done Mouse right when he was doing, you know, underground comics. It took
him
a good 10 years of really finding his craft to be able to tell it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially if you read the original underground version that's about 4 pages long.
Pages long? No, I've never read that.
It's, it was published, actually, oddly, by Marvel Comics in this underground thing. They did comics books or comics book, I forget. And it's it's an odd little magazine-sized thing with, like, Trina Robbins and a bunch of other underground people.
Wow.
But I digress. I add her on too much, but my... we're running near, I think we just have a couple minutes left. I think I just want to cover a couple of other artists that you have on there. Trondheim and, did I pronounce it right?
Trondheim?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, so far both, seem to be really key parts, to, the kind of the launch, the first second. You have a whole thwack of work by both of them. Is that something important where you want to be able to expose? Because right now, really the closest to that is the stuff that MBM does, but I see
that's right.
that you kind of done something different than what MBM was doing.
Yeah, slightly. It's a different approach. I mean, it's a different... And we, you know, we're definitely presenting ourselves to, you know, a lot of the people I speak to, whether it's the library world or the booksellers or the media, you know, we're an author-driven house, and so we're talking about voices, you know, and rather than product. And so these are people that, you know, we want to keep, you know, we want to keep presenting their work to the world we deal in, you know. But there are, I mean, just so you know, there's some people straight out of the School of Visual Arts here in New York that are, two of them are students of Jessica Abel's, one of them is another graduate from there, but they, you know, one of them isn't even done with school, and I signed them up on a project with a really good, really incredible script, in fact, you know, so they're going to have, you know, there's going to be some launches like that, but we have a lot of people in the works, you know, the next, we have this big Jessica Abel and Matt Madden textbook.
Oh, wow.
Which is going to be, I think, a kind of defining work. We have some comics journalism. There's an Iraq project by Greg Cook. There's actually some surprises coming this year, which I'm not supposed to talk about just yet. But I mean, there's just a lot of stuff cooking and in the works.
Now, one thing I'm curious about is, talk about the European focus, is that there is a lot of masterful work that's kind of fallen to the wayside or over the last 20 years. And I wonder if that's going to be something that you'll ever look into, like maybe reprinting some old Hugo Pratt or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't... It would have to be something where we would kind of open up another...
It'll be
opening up another line in our collection in a way.
Yeah.
So it's not something I foresee doing, definitely not in the next couple of years. It's just because there's so much happening now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in some ways, there's been a very limited exposure to that. It's interesting that a lot of the creators working today are very familiar with that, you know, and they're the influences from Hugo Pratt, from Mobius, from, you know, all the greats. From Europe, you know, is very much alive in those who work today, but the general public here doesn't necessarily know those names
yet,
which is a shame. Yet I think the time will come for that.
That's right.
Right now, I feel like we need to be on the kind of on the cusp of what's, you know, this cutting edge of what's happening now.
Well, push it forward, right? I mean, like you say, the audience is there.
Yes.
And you talk about the perfect storm. In terms, my history is bookstores, and having grown up and worked in them for a better part of my life, I know that for a long time you just didn't see comics unless it was maybe DC in publishers' catalogs, and with the collision of the book trade being interested in this stuff and the comics industry. And just the audience is no longer satisfied with going just to the comic book stores,
right?
The direct retailers or whatever you have. So we've been able to create a niche at the store that I work at, where we do a lot of really great art, design books, and foreign language stuff, and importing books that we like. And something like First Second comes along, and it's just like what we were wishing for without even wishing for it.
This is great. This is music to my ears.
Yeah, it's fabulous. No, I think you're right on. And I think this won't be the last time we're talking to you about things you've got coming up, you know?
Yeah. Oh, great. Well, I'm definitely, whenever, just give a call.
Well, I hope to have some...
I mean, there's a lot, you know, just so you know, I mean, going into the, you know, what's coming with For a Second, you'll see there's a lot more.
Oh, I can't wait.
Well, I'm extremely excited, and hopefully in the future we'll maybe talk to some of your creators.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's some good ones to talk to, for sure.
Eddie Campbell's definitely high on my list, and Steve Siegel's one, actually, I've been meaning to hunt down for a while.
Right.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Week.
It's a pleasure.
And for everyone, check out Mark Siegel, publisher or editor in charge of First Second Books.
And you can visit them at firstsecondbooks.net.
.com, I think it is.
Is it .com?
And we actually just updated. We just upgraded our site. So.
Right. No, it looks great. I was just checking it out, printed some stuff off of it. And nice work. Great talking to you, Mark.
Hey,
thanks.
Thank you. This is fun. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Mark Siegel, publisher, editor, chief guy for Second Books. Great stuff. I highly recommend everyone check it out. And if you don't...
Too bad.
I'll get mad at you. I won't get mad. I'll just cry a little. Thank you, Sean, for joining me today.
Anytime.
It's been awesome. That was great. He was awesome.
Yeah.
I really liked that. Up next is Crimes and Treasons. And next week, I'm going to be joined by... Don will be in the studio with me. And we're going to do a phone interview... staying on the old publisher thing, we're going to be talking to Gary Groth and Kim Thompson.
Oh, that's awesome.
The chief bigwigs of Fantagraphics Comics.
I might come in for that one.
We'll probably keep the door locked.
All right.
Wah, wah, wah. No, it's going to be awesome. We're going to discuss the lawsuit of Harlan Douchebag Ellison. I said it here. Go to Fantagraphics.com to find out what's going on. It's pretty crappy stuff. Harlan... Boo to you. Also, I just want to say condolences to the Vonnegut family.
That's right.
Kurt Vonnegut just passed away. Was it yesterday?
Yeah, I think this morning.
This morning. I'm a big fan of his writing. I noticed Sean was reading one of his books. So I was on the bus today. A lot of people were reading Vonnegut books. And, you know, check out his stuff.
Yeah.
I know a lot of comic writers were influenced by him. So, you know, there's somewhere to go. Week after Kim Thompson, Gary Garth, I'll be joined by the man that killed Captain America, Ed Brubaker. I probably won't talk about it because I have far more other interesting questions than Captain America form. His series Criminal, fantastic. He's one of my favorite. I don't want to say he's a mainstream writer because I really think he's bringing something else to the table. So we'll check it out. You can check us out, inkstuds.com, and Crimes and Treason up next. What? Oh, and I'm going to play some Action Suits to end off with, My Janine. It's Pete Bagg's favorite song off the album.